Welcome to the Everyday PM podcast, the podcast where we discuss project management principles for your everyday life. My name is Ann Campia, and I'm a certified project/program manager with a decade of experience working for healthcare, retail, consumer goods, and tech industries. I'm so excited to welcome Greg Christensen, who is the vice president of ProjectHub.com. And for those that are not familiar, ProjectHub.com is a project management software that eliminates the complexity because, as you all know, that's exactly what we want to do as project managers. So, Greg, I am so excited to welcome you onto the podcast. We have a fun episode in store, but before we get started, why don't you take a brief moment to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Anne, for having me. I'm really glad to be here. And so for me, I'm in the project management space, but I'm coming from the CMMS world with facilities management, using CMMS platforms, helping people get onboarded. And one of the things I always heard about was project management. Can we do project management with this solution? So that led me to joining Project Hub. So it's really exciting for me, but I've got a steep learning curve and thought getting together with you, leaning on your industry expertise would really not only help me, but I think it would help a lot of people. And the way we planned out the episode is it should be fun.
Let's hope. Yes, I think this is going to be fun only because, you know, as project managers, we are always aware of our time. And so what Greg and I have decided to do today, in hopes of me being able to teach Greg a thing or two about project management, is we are actually going to set a timer for 20 minutes and envision us having a water cooler chat, coffee chat, whatever you want to call it. We've huddled. Greg has a ton of questions that he wants to ask me about being a project manager, and I am here to answer them. So what we're going to do is go ahead and set this timer. And Greg, you're actually going to facilitate the conversation from there on. And I'm hopefully going to answer your questions. Well, I guess we'll find out. But also for those that are listening, as you listen to Greg's questions, do please feel free after we post this podcast to chime in yourself. You don't always have to agree with the host. I'm not always right. I will be the first to admit that. So if there is anything you want to add on to the conversation, I highly encourage you to also chime in. That is what our project management community is all about, is sharing our experiences and learning from each other. So with that being said, I've got it right here, Greg, 20 minutes. And all our time starts now.
All right. So first question, what are the basic principles one should incorporate when establishing a project?
Now, I like that you lead off with this question. And I honestly, I'm going to be honest with everybody that I had to re-review the principles that are in the seventh edition. But when I listen to your question, you're actually asking about what are those basic principles, not necessarily what are the principles by the book. When what I mean by the book, by the project management body of knowledge, right? Which for those that are aware, that is kind of our guiding principles. That's our book that we reference as project managers. If there was some sort of Bible, that would be it. And within the seventh edition, they published 12 project delivery principles. And so the reason why I want to start there is because the standard for project management is built upon these 12 project delivery principles, which are stewardship, team, stakeholders, value, holistic thinking, leadership, tailoring, quality, complexity, opportunities and threats, and change management. Now, Greg, to your question, what are the basic ones? From what I'm getting out of your question, you just want to know what are some of the ones that I should start with. And to me, of the 12 that are published in the PMBOK, I definitely think value is number one. The PMBOK, as well as project management itself, the industry is growing towards this trend of what is our value add to the company and to the objectives of the company and the goals of the company, et cetera. And so when we think about value and what we can add as project managers, I think that is one of the principles you have to consider when you're kicking off a project is, what is the value of my project? What is this going to lead to? Is it going to be a return on investment for the company? Are we going to find in this change process that we're going to be more efficient, whether it's in our time, our resources, or our spend? You know, there's got to be something that we're thinking about when we're establishing a project of why are we doing this project? I think it's as basic as that, Greg, is consider why you're doing the project. And if you don't have a solid answer, then you may want to go back to the drawing board and just figure out what the scope of your project originally was and what its intent was supposed to be. Because when we take a step back, Greg, what is the intent of a project?
It's a deliverable. You have to achieve a result, an outcome.
Yeah. And kind deadline. Of riffing off of that, right, is a project really is a change. When you really think about it, a project is a change for something. It's a change to make a process better, to make a process more efficient. It's a change to, again, bring in some sort of value into the company. That's the reason why stakeholders want to invest in a project. And so if you can't answer that question with why are we doing this project, if you can't come up with a solid answer, you may need to figure out what your scope and your intent of the project originally was. So going back to your question, in terms of basic principles, I would start there. Understand what the value is of your project and then work from there. Okay, well, I am doing project A because it's going to fix a lot of these antiquated processes that were taking us 50 steps in this new change through this project. We'll dwindle that down to 10 steps. Imagine how efficient now that's going to be if we can execute this project well. So now you've got the value. Then from there, I think you can springboard to, who are your stakeholders? Who do you need to buy into the project? It's understanding who you will be working with and who will be executing the work, who will kind of be the recipient or of the value of the work that you complete. Essentially, it's a study of who you're working with, who you need buy-in from, who you need to communicate with throughout the life of the project. So really kind of understanding your environment in that view, right? And then it comes down to, I think a lot of the other ones, when you look at them, stewardship, team, holistic thinking, that's to me is inherent in how you will operate as a project manager as you execute the project. So I think those, if you are even just starting out as a project manager, those should be kind of inherent in your DNA in many ways. And that's something that you're already tapping into, whether you've thought about it to incorporate into your project or not. And then I think I would end with the basic principle of leadership. I think a lot of these kind of are intertwined with that. So the better leader you can make yourself and the awareness you have of your stakeholders and what the value of your project is, you will bring that leadership to the forefront of the project. You'll be able to guide the teams to execution. You'll be able to ensure quality. You'll be able to observe for opportunities and threats, like all of these other principles that PMBOK and PMI have brought up. I think they're just kind of, they're fluid. They all work together in that way. Greg, any questions?
Not really. I actually think those are really good because you're talking about three main principles, and each of those, when I think about them, if you don't have those in place, if you don't have that set up, you're going to proceed prematurely. You're not going to have what you need in place. So if you can't answer, I like the first one that you brought up, the question of why. If you don't know the answer to that, you have to go back to the drawing board. You have to figure out why. So that was great. The next question is, what are the top five risk factors when it comes to projects in general? So what I mean there is what are the primary risk factors when you enter a project? But now I'm starting to think, well, we already covered one of the big ones. Is if you don't know why, that's going to definitely be a risk factor.
Yeah, you've learned already. Great job.
If you don't understand your stakeholders, you've got a pretty big problem there, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have leadership, we all know you don't have anything.
Yeah, and I would say you're absolutely right, Greg. And I'm so happy you've learned in just a few seconds that I've answered your first question. But to go to your second question, risk factors, that's an interesting one because it really depends on the project as well. And to your point, there are things that you really should have considered from the get-go. And those are your kind of basic principles that we talked about. But outside of those, your risk factors can vary depending on what you're working on, right? So let's say, Greg, you're working on building a house, but you live in Chicago. And I am also building a house, same project, but I live in Southern California. The risk factors from an environmental perspective you would want to consider, obviously, weather varies between the two of us. I may be able to construct faster because I think data shows that Southern California's got pretty good weather, right? But Chicago, you might have a windy day, rainy day, whatever. Now, the other considerations we'd want to make if we were both working on the same project are, I also have things that are out of my control. Think about all the projects that have happened during the pandemic and how much companies have had to now, I hate to use the word pivot, but maybe pivot's the right word. They had a plan. The pandemic hit. It could be supply chain woes, or it could be resourcing, manufacturing, could be any number of things that, yes, we can plan so much as project managers, but these risk factors were, you know, probably at the time of planning of the project, 1% chance of this happening, right? You know, you just don't know that part of it. And so right. You'll see a lot of good examples coming out of the pandemic when, if and when we ever do, which I really hope we're near the end of this thing. You'll see some great examples of how companies have reacted and changed their plans based on all of the limitations and the constraints that these risk factors have given to any type of project that they've been working on. Now, the flip side of that is there are some common risk factors that we can think about, right? Resourcing, I'm sure across the board, no matter what project you're looking at, project type, scale, complexity, doesn't matter. I think that resourcing is something that should be considered always. It's the people doing the work. And do you have the right amount of people? Have you considered how much time it's going to take to execute your project? And have you done the due diligence and planning well enough to be able to figure that out? And that to me is just one very common risk factor that everybody should be looking at when they are assessing the risks for their project is resourcing. The other piece of that is obviously budget. I think you kind of talked about that earlier already in terms of a project's the purpose of a project is often about time and money and resources, right? But we kind of solidified that there's also the conversation about what's the actual why and the value of it. Now, coming back to risk factors, we also want to consider the budget. Have we properly considered everything? What procurement's going to cost? So what are the resources, labor going to cost? Have we thought about it all? And the other piece of that is time. It's just time. And time is another risk factor in that we can easily see time slip away or get pulled in based on some other risk factors that we're looking at. Again, going back to let's talk about the chip shortage, right? I think that's a big one that's impacting like automotives, tech, whatever else. I think that's a great example of a risk factor that may or may not have been planned for, but now you have to consider what that impact is to your schedule as well as to your budget.
That makes sense. Right? That makes sense. So it seems to me that although you have top risk factors when planning and entering and executing a project, what we really have to do is not only have our usual suspects taken care of, but you got to leave a little room for these unexpected things. Like, you know, the Suez Canal gets jammed up and now you got a big chip mm-hmm. shortage problem. That was a great example because yep. it hurt everything. So yep. that was a really important call out. Are you ready for the next question?
I think I am, Greg. If I've answered your second one, let's go.
Yeah, I'm good on the second one. And these are things, these questions we could talk about forever, right? So we got to keep it tight. We're on a time limit here. So what are the biggest problems that you see or have seen when it comes to daily project management process? And an example would be project visibility, unnecessarily doubling up on workload, or missing deadlines due to excessive backlog.
Wow, that's a great question, Greg. And I will ask this to buy myself some time on the answer, but does this come from a place of experience, this asking this question?
It does. So when we look at project management, there's so many different approaches to it. Now, of course, you've got PMBOK and PMI, right? So that gives you a framework. That's what's important about that. It gives everyone a framework. But then there's all this variability across people that manage projects, whether they're project managers or not. I myself have experienced, you know, obviously, if I participate in a scrum or something like that with Project Hub, we might find that something isn't being delivered on time and we want to work through that. So that's really where that came from, is I see it as a common thing for everyone dealing with projects.
What I would say, and this is going to be off question because I'm going to say it to get to the heart of your question.
Okay.
Which I feel like I've done with every answer I've given so far. So I apologize for the way I structure my responses here. But just listening to your example, one of my favorite phases of a process is what happens after you finish the project. Is if you have the opportunity to, you should run a postmortem or a lessons learned exercise. And really understand, you know, what are the things that we did well? And to your point, as you look at processes, where are the areas where we could have been more efficient? And I think that is such a great investment in time, if you can do it as a company, to really take a step back, take a holistic view that kind of goes into that principle of holistic thinking, right? But take a holistic view of what you did on the project and really, really understand, here are the areas that we can invest a little bit of time to make more efficient the next time we do this project or do a project of similar nature or do the same change or process. But whatever it is, I think it's really important to have that conversation. Now, I am aware that most companies will do postmortems, but there's also the idea of premortem. And I can't it makes me excited just talking about this area of the project as well, because it's one of those things where I can't emphasize how critical this could be to the success of your next project, is not only ending your project and talking about what could be done better, what can be continued forward and what can be fixed for next time, but then taking that information to right before you kick off your next project, pre-mortem. Share the same information again, because who knows how much time has elapsed between one project to another, right? And so you want to continue to share that information. Maybe resources have left the project, you have new people on the project. It's always important to just kind of rehash and revisit and make that a part of your continuous cycle of the project, right? Now, going to your question at heart, though, I would say some of the common things that I've seen is processes to have a process, if that's the right way to say it. How could I correlate this to everyday life? It's almost like living in the Truman Show, where you are kind of repeating, or maybe a Groundhog Day. I'm trying to get to the point of like, some people just think they need to have a process in place to say they have a process, but is it the right process, right? And so oftentimes companies are burdened with these antiquated processes where when you started your PMO, there was probably a way to do things, traditional way to do things. But as the company has evolved and as you've gotten better and you've have experience in doing the same projects over and over again, you should through time be able to find continuous improvement, right? And be able to identify areas where you could be better, faster, do things cheaper, less resources, et cetera. And so sometimes the failure comes from just having too many processes layered on top of each other. And then on top of that, having too much red tape to even get through the gates to get to the next process. And I know that was like a very circular way to say that you could just have a process in place that is not the right process for you.
It makes sense actually to me, because as you described it and I'm following along, process upon process is going to create a bunch of blind spots for sure. So that makes complete sense to me.
I think
that's a really good way to put it, that it's almost like, you know, the pre-mortem, post-mortem can inform changes to the processes. Right. And you can eliminate certain steps that are creating those blind spots. So that's
exactly
that comes full circle.
You want to be able to see around corners, and you can't do that if you have to, you know, go through X amount of red tape and go through 10 steps in the process that maybe five of them were not necessary steps to have to go through. We can often be kind of our biggest obstacle when you think about it. Companies get so kind of stuck in their ways that they forget that they should actually be looking internally to figure out what's wrong. Have you ever been in this situation? I'll just ask you this to close out this response. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you're talking to coworkers and they say, why is this happening again? Or didn't this happen the last project? Or you get questions like, I remember we had the same road bump, like, you know, three seasons ago or whatever, however, somewhere along the way, you're having a conversation with your team and you're going to hear, oh, I hate this because this happened last time. Right. And so when you hear those comments, Greg, that is your cue as a PM to say, okay, well, if this is a repetitive issue, I need to take some time and look into what's causing that.
I agree. I've experienced it absolutely the way you described, and the challenge that I always faced, and I think this is a constant, you have to be careful of it, is do you have that time available to do a proper assessment and address the problem? Because corporations, project teams, et cetera, are moving so fast, they don't have time to stop and do what they know they need to do. And they know that, but they're stuck. So I have experienced that. Absolutely. That's a great round out to question number three.
Yeah, agreed. And again, another topic we can dedicate an entire podcast to.
Oh, for sure. A year worth of podcasting. So question number four might relate to question number three. So how does technology come into play to mitigate and solve these problems? And I know that's a pretty big question because we've talked about so much, but in a general sense, not a specific technology, but technology in general, how do we use that in our approach to project management to mitigate, you know, the risks, the pitfalls, the lack of communication, blind spots, et cetera? What would a general answer be to that in your experience?
Yeah. So technology plays a big role. I almost consider it another stakeholder, right? Even though it's not a living, breathing person, it's definitely a part and inherent in every project that we're working on. Now, I'll give you an example of an instance where I've seen technology actually hinder the ability for a project to be successful, in which case, if you are trying to implement a piece of technology that is supposed to make things more efficient, it will hinder productivity if, one, you don't have the subject matter experts. Oh, that's our time. So I'm going to finish this response. If you don't have subject matter experts in place who can help people who are not so tech savvy on board to that technology, I've seen this happen where there was a out of the box tool that was going to help the company progress forward, have all the data into one place for PMs and engineers and designers and your finance people and your costing, et cetera. Everyone can go into the same system. Doesn't it sound wonderful?
It's wonderful.
Not wonderful when a large percentage of your population does not know how to use the technology to be able to make things more efficient. So it's about understanding your resources and understanding their knowledge level and what the learning curve is going to be to even onboard people to this piece of technology. That in itself is a great example of how there was something that could have been so impactful in a positive way for a company, where I've actually seen it work in a negative way. It actually set the company back because it spent a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of their resources to then ultimately figure out that the company could not kind of inherit and envelop all of the features that the technology had offered that were going to lead to this more positive state.
Okay? Yes.
Now, where I've seen technology flourish is in companies who are very data driven. I mean, think about your Amazons, right? Amazon loves data. They always interact with customers, so they better be taking information down on who their customer is. Being customer-centric, you want to understand what your customer shops for, what are their buying habits, everything. And Amazon does such a great job with technology and data in that, you know, they collect, I don't know how, again, I don't know how, but they have information and they also promote that they are very, very data-driven. And I have to imagine that's through their AWS, right? Their Amazon tech services, right? That they Absolutely. Offer actually as their within their internal company, but they also license it out to other companies to use as well. And so through their web services, I think what you'll find is there's a lot of efficiencies that can be drawn in terms of not only just having a place to store your data through that piece of technology, but also finding workflows, understanding your timing, being able to even capture resourcing and resource constraints and things like that. It can be as robust as your communication platform, right? So how are you communicating to your stakeholders? I don't know that AWS does all of this. I'm kind of just rattling off all the cool things that tech could do, which is it could also give you a visual status report, especially for your leadership who has 2 seconds to consume what the status of your project is. A good piece of technology will give you a very easy way to just click a button and get the information you need to be able to hand off to your leadership, to your stakeholders. So there's also that aspect of it as well. But as project managers, what I think I would say in terms of technology is that we can absolutely embrace technology. I think with everything that's happening right now, all the changes, we're all working in either waterfall, agile, or hybrid environments. There's going to be a piece of technology that you can then use yourself to be able to make things a lot more efficient. But just make sure from the get-go that you're ready for that learning curve to really understand the features and take some time to learn it so that you can use it properly.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to answer number 4. Now, here's my concern at this point, because we've learned a lot, we've covered a lot, and we passed the 20-minute time limit. Does that mean I still get to ask the last 2 questions?
All right. Let's go speed round right here.
All right, super lightning round. So
I'm long-winded, so it's probably my fault.
I don't think so. I think this is great, actually. Can you share your approach to planning and building out a podcast episode? Like a quick, just bam, bam, bam. How do you build out a podcast?
I approach the podcast as if I met somebody and I have some sort of, I hate to use this word, but I have a vibe with a person. Greg, we met, right? You introduced yourself to me. We didn't know each other before. We had a conversation. It was a great conversation. And you said, hey, I have this idea. I think it would be fun to bounce some questions off that I have about PM. I said, let's do it. And so when it comes to planning the podcast, it's a little bit organic in that way. I definitely always want to keep to the core of what the podcast is about, which is the everyday PM. How do we correlate this to our everyday lives, right? In which case, this session is like you ran into a colleague and you want to ask some questions. Yeah. But that is really at the heart of the podcast. I try to keep that always first and foremost in mind as I entertain guests or topics for the podcast. But the planning of it is as organic and as easy as me understanding who my guest host is going to be. I usually have that conversation about 15 to 20 minutes. I know if that's going to work out or not. We align on the topic. Some guests like to just come on cold without any outline or anything. They just want to know what the topic is and we go for it. But for myself, I'll kind of outline a rundown of what we'll cover on the show. Do we stay on topic all the time? Maybe not, but you know, just gives me a little bit of a execution plan per se. And then we go from there, schedule the time, record the podcast, but the planning itself is really, just understanding what the main topic is, knowing if it still correlates to the heart of what the everyday PM is about, and then making sure that the guest feels comfortable with what they're going to talk about. So is it something they're passionate about? Is it something that we can derive great examples or insight from? I just want to make sure that it feels like we're just having a conversation, but it's something that they truly are interested and passionate about talking about. So that's how
Good.
I plan.
Good. Very helpful. Number 5 is in the can. So Sweet. Question number 6. Do you have a favorite project management philosophy or style that you can describe for us?
So I have always been known, and you can ask folks that I've worked with, I've been known as kind of like this Zen project manager. who is usually calm, cool, and collected under pressure. So when it comes to philosophy, there's actually a book I'm reading. It's called Zen. Zen Project Management, actually. And I'll come up with the author and share with the audience there. But it's just about being mindful in every situation that you're in. When you think about it, Greg, people on your team are looking to you to set the tone. And so if you find yourself in a situation where it's hyper stressful and you start to stress out, or you start to get aggressive, or you start to change your tone, watch the room. The whole tone of the room and your team that's in there with you is going to change too. And so as soon as I figured that out for myself, and I've always kind of been that person in my everyday life, so it wasn't really a big shift for me to make. But as soon as I realized that how I present myself in my everyday life is very efficient in my professional life as a PM, I've noticed that utilizing kind of that same skill set of keeping calm under pressure and helping everybody else inhibit that same quality, that it's really helped. And it really has become my favorite philosophy for project management.
I like that approach because it feels like a superpower.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, when they're meeting people or you're on discovery calls or whatever it is, icebreakers, what's your superpower? That I would view as a superpower because it allows you to get into essentially any situation, do an assessment, but you can somewhat detach. But that's not what I mean. It's actually the opposite. So I think that's a really good approach. So that's exactly what I was looking for. And boy, that's it. Question six out of the way. And we only had six today. So I hope that was fun for you and your audience.
Yeah, of course. And Greg, again, thank you so much for bringing these questions to the forefront of, you know, our listeners and those that are watching us on YouTube as well. I think hopefully my feedback can help somebody who's been thinking about the same things. Looking forward to doing more of these as well. If you have more questions, we'll do another round robin of this, Greg, as they come up. Because again, our PM community is all about sharing our experiences, what we think, how we approach things, and learning. Because what I would respond to those six questions, somebody else might respond very differently. And so it's good to have that well-rounded perspective. So again, I appreciate that you've come to me with these questions. I hope that you've learned something today.
I have.
Okay, good. And I hope that you feel a bit more confident about your PM knowledge. And for those that are listening in, Greg is a project manager, but he's passionate about it. And I think that's what I loved about this topic today, is that you came to me and said, I am just passionate about this idea of project management, and I would love to learn more. And I think that made me feel really great about having this conversation, because that's really what we want here on the Everyday PM, is, you know, just passionate people about talking about project management.
No, this has been phenomenal. I really, really enjoyed this, and I look forward to doing it again. I'll put some ideas together and we'll see if we can come up with another episode. And I agree, having a conversation is where everything starts. And if there's places where we can, you know, connect on the topic and, you know, just do this. I had a blast. I really did. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Greg. And for those that are listening, if you have questions as well, feel free to send them in. We can do a whole nother podcast of these. We can have Greg be our kind of proxy question asker, if that's how it's going to work out. But if you have any questions for the project management community, I've got a network of amazing project managers who, you know, stand beside me and are equally, if not better than me, as project managers. So definitely would love to bring them on and share their expertise as well. So that will do it for Greg and I in this installment of the Everyday PM podcast. Greg, if people want to ask you questions, they want to talk more about project management or anything that you're working on, including projecthub.com, where can they find you online?
Two ways. Number one, LinkedIn. Right now, that's where I'm, you know, kind of connecting with people, building out the network, answering questions. And then projecthub.com itself, we've got what we call our one-page wonder page. If somebody wants to sign up and be considered for pre-launch access, because we're in pre-launch, definitely do that as well, because you'll probably be talking to me.
And it's super exciting for you as well. Congratulations, being in the pre-launch, you're almost there. And I love this idea of having a piece of software that can cut the complexity and help our lives as project managers be a little bit better. So if you are at all interested in learning more about projecthub.com, definitely access the one pager or reach out to Greg as well. So Greg, again, thank you for your time today. If folks want to follow me and ask me any more questions, hopefully I can give you great answers as well. You can follow me on LinkedIn. We'll have this episode posted as well on theeverydaypm.com. You can listen to this episode on Anchor, Google Play, Spotify, all of your Apple podcasts, pretty much every podcasting platform that's out there. And you can access the Everyday PM, our visual version of the podcast, on YouTube, youtube.com/AnnCampia. So that will do it for Greg and I. And thank you everybody for your time. Thanks for listening in. Hope you learned a lot. And until next time, take care.